Hello out there, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host today, and I am very pleased to have with me young lady Sarah Bryden Crawford. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Chris?
Good. Sarah Bryden Crawford. Now, you got married to that Crawford boy.
I did. The youngest of Carl's two. Colin.
Yes, Colin. And now you have two children.
Yes, we do. Two-and-a-half-year-old boy and a seven-month little girl.
Isn't that crazy?
They're getting big on me.
So how do you like being a mother?
Oh, I love being a mom. Yep. Ever since I was a little girl, I always said when I grew up, that's what I wanted to be, was a mom. And I'd figure out the rest later. So I'm happy to be living out that dream.
Yes, yes. You guys are a cute couple. Oh, cute family. Well,
thank you. Yes. We think so, too.
Yes. How about Grandma and Grandpa? They excited about having
Oh, yes. Yeah. These are the first on my parents' side.
I thought they were the first.
Carl and Shauna have a couple more on Colin's side, but first girl. My daughter's their first granddaughter, so pretty exciting about that.
Yes. You are the grant and clinic practice manager at Jersey Community Hospital.
Yes, I am.
Yes. Now, tell me, Sarah, where did you grow up at?
Yep. So I actually am from the southwest suburbs of Chicago, and my dad took a total different job, left his previous career field, and moved us here. And I was in seventh grade. So seventh grade, we moved here. I started going to school in Jerseyville. I graduated from Jersey Community High School. And then from there, I went to Eastern Illinois University for my bachelor's degrees. Yes. I actually got two degrees there, graduated in 2019, and then later went on to get my master's in healthcare administration from St. Louis College of Health Careers back in 21. So lots of school under my belt.
Yes.
And then while I was going to school at Eastern, I actually interned at Jersey Community Hospital. I was very fortunate to have kind of gotten in contact with the administrative team at that time, and they took me on as an intern, and hey, I never left.
Yeah. Now, is schooling something that you've always enjoyed since you were a child?
Yes. I was the one who was a little neurotic, to say the least, about getting my straight A's. And I actually graduated valedictorian from JCHS back in 2015.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I've always had a knack for schooling and, kind of having that organization. And I found some fulfillment in that.
Yes. And who watches the kids whenever you're at work?
Yes. Okay. So the kids go to daycare a couple days a week. And then Colin's mom, my mother-in-law, watches them one day. And my mom watches them one day. So both grandmas have some time.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Do they come to your house or do you take them there?
They come to my house. I'm spoiled.
I know. Yeah. That is nice. Yeah. And the kids like it better.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And both are crazy about their Gigi and their grandma days. They look forward to those every week.
Yes. So you went to Eastern. When you got out of Eastern, did you come straight here or did?
I did.
Right back home.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was, by the time I left Eastern, I was already engaged to Colin. I had a job lined up at Jersey Community Hospital. And so I was ready to start my adult life in Jerseyville.
Now, did you and Colin, were you dating through high school?
We started dating senior year. So I still say we're high school sweethearts.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we were 17, and that was 10 years ago now.
Yeah. When did you guys get married?
We got married in 2019.
2019.
Yeah. So I graduated in May of 2019, married that fall.
I see. So now you're the grant and clinic practice manager. Tell me about the grant work. What's your job at the hospital?
Yeah, so in the grants part of my role, particularly, I help kind of screen for granting opportunities to see if there's an award opportunity that we may be able to apply for, and I work with that through the application process, gathering a lot of data, usually writing proposals for plans, how we would plan to use grant funding if we were awarded. Mm-hmm. A lot of these grants have to do with expanding our service lines at the hospital and through our clinics.
Lines.
Yes.
Can explain that.
Yeah. So service lines could be anything that we do to help serve our patient population. We have a lot of programs that have to do with our substance use and recovery clinic and treatment options that we have, chronic care management, basically just expanding what we currently offer or adding new things that maybe we didn't offer before through providers and just services in general.
Is there a lot of available money out there for the substance abuse?
Yes. The last, I'm going to say 5 to 10 years anyways, there's been a big push at the federal level to help hospitals, clinics, kind of have some funds to help overcome the opioid epidemic. So I think we're all aware of the, you know, the overprescribing of opioids that happened maybe 20 years ago, then coming to realization about, you know, the damage that that was doing to patients and how now we can rectify that and how we can help get patients connected to resources. People, in a lot of cases, have become addicted to substances without, you know, really realizing what was happening to their body or understanding that they were becoming addicted. I think too often we assume that people are quote unquote, you know, druggies seeking these substances. And really it's, I was prescribed something for pain that was unmanageable without it. And now my body has, you know, become adjusted and my brain levels are, anyways, body just has become addicted to it.
Okay. Right now. Okay. You saw me get up a while ago, you know?
Yes.
I hurt my back, working out, you know, it was my own fault. You know, I lifted too much and didn't use enough legs, too much back, and all of a sudden, okay. And I've been taking some Tylenol for it, you know, but trying to stretch it out every day, trying to work it, trying to, you know, and it will heal up, you know. But I was sitting on the couch just earlier today, and you can be in some pain, you know, getting ready. I couldn't even put my shoes and socks on. I had to actually carry my shoes and socks out to the garage where I have a workout room and start stretching myself so I could eventually, and then I had to go to the wellness center. I got in the sauna, I got in the pool, tried to continue stretching, and then finally, you know, I could put my shoes and socks on.
Right. It's a long process.
And come to work, you know, but I could understand. I was sitting there, I was thinking, I can understand the opioid thing, you know, people getting hooked on it, because you just, all you can think about when you're in pain, that's all you can think about.
It becomes all-consuming.
Yeah,
yes.
It is. It's terrible. So what are people doing to, instead of using the opioids, what are they doing?
Right. So, you know, there's different ways you can manage pain. You know, appropriate prescription of opioids, if that is what you need, you know, if your provider determines that, but doing it at a manageable level and then tapering off if you're able to get to that point, maybe incorporating some stretching, physical therapy, those kinds of tactics outside of just medication are a huge help. But if you get to the point where you are overusing these medications and your body has now become dependent on them, that's where these service lines are able to kind of kick in and meet you where you're at to kind of wean you off and help you get back to a life without being dependent on these opioids.
There's much more of an awareness of opioids now than there was 10 years ago.
Right.
You know.
Yes. Thank God for that.
Yeah. Thank goodness. So are the opioids, or do they have any other types of medicine other than opioids? Is there anything else, or is that it?
You know, there are pain medications that aren't that high of a level available out there as well. And some patients, they really truly need that medication, but it's finding a dosage that is appropriate for the pain level and then seeing if there's other things we can do to manage it.
So this grant money that you're looking for, what will happen with that money at the hospital? What will go on with that?
Yeah, so when we get an award that's specific to something like treatment recovery, we are able to use those funds to pay for provider time. So we have nurse practitioners who work very closely with patients who are in these situations. These providers, you know, prescribe. They have clinic time, of course. They get them connected to additional resources like peer recovery support. So peer recovery support is basically a person who has lived experience. So this would be, if I was a peer recovery support specialist, I am somebody who previously was addicted, overcome my addiction, and now can share with other people my story and help support them in their own story.
So is there a lot of group?
There's a lot of group counseling, SMART recovery meetings. They're usually virtual meetings sometimes. Think of like an AA and Al-Anon, those kind of group meetings that happen in anonymous, you know, places like churches and things. They do those kind of same kind of support groups, but they're virtual, or they even meet with people one-on-one and just say, hey, I know exactly what you're going through. This is what I did. How can I help you do the same? And so our providers actually will connect patients to people who are able to do that. And then there is medication. Actually, there's medication available that helps wean you off opioid medication. There are injections, and we have oral medication as well. It doesn't replace the opioid, but it helps rewire your brain chemistry to no longer need the opioid, and instead can and move on with your life in a healthier way.
It's an addiction.
Yes, it gets addictive. Absolutely.
Yes. Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Sarah Bryden Crawford. It's kind of a long name.
It is a long name.
She is with the grant person, gets the grants, working on, and also the clinic practice manager. One thing, does it seem like, because, you know, this is where you're at, you know, you're very schooled in this area. Does it seem like, from what I've heard, it really, this opioid epidemic hits the smaller communities, the rural communities, worse than in the cities? Or is that true? Or tell me about that.
You know, I remember back in 2019 or so, when we were really applying for these grants for the first time, we had to do some data pulling to apply. And our Tri-County area had the highest rates of opioid overdose in the state of Illinois. And I'm not just Jersey, but, you know, Greene, Calhoun, we had astronomically high.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is, you know, true across all states, or if that just happened to be true in Illinois. I didn't look, you know, in other areas across the country, but there's something to be said, I think, about, you know, small communities. You know, you get to know your provider really well, and they want to do the best they can for you.
Right.
And I think just at the time, we didn't understand the impact of opioids, and so there was maybe that overprescription kind of came into play. And then you hate to say it, but sometimes in smaller communities, for those who aren't getting into substance use by prescription, you know, there's something to be said about what else is there to do in a small town. You don't want to keep that
partying with opioids.
Yes, and you know, there's farming chemicals available to people. You know, all those things you can mix and make.
You can mix and make it.
Right. And I don't know the ins and outs of all that.
Yeah,
and
course.
I don't want to taint our community in a bad way at all. I just think there's something to be said about that you don't want to ignore.
So you might say from that, the more activities for everybody, the better.
Yes.
For kids especially, and
yes,
young people.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
What is the age level that the opioid epidemic hits the hardest? What would you say for your research?
From my research, I'm going to say, you know, for the opioid epidemic in particular, people who were prescribed and then overprescribed, it's middle-aged to, you know, so like I would say 40 to 60 age. It is older. But what we're seeing now is kids who maybe watched their parents take these medications, not understanding the damage it was doing, then said, you know, Mom, I fell and I hurt my back, or whatever the case. You explain, you know, your kind of situation you're going through now. And then Mom says, well, this is what my doctor prescribes me. It's okay. Maybe then it's a handing down of medication. Or there is also street drugs. I mean, you know, there are young people who are getting into that as well. But it usually starts with, I have undiagnosed ADHD. I'm looking for something to calm myself down.
Okay.
And so there's a sharing of Xanax or something like that.
Is that what Xanax is about?
Yeah. You know, or Xanax is about anxiety. But then
everybody's got anxiety.
Right. And then there's Adderall, and that's specific to ADHD. And so, yeah, there's a sharing of, maybe there's a student who is legitimately prescribed, but then shares with his friend because he says, well, my doctor says it's safe for me. And then there's this kind of passing and sharing of drugs, you know, without prescription.
Let's just, while you're here, okay, for the listeners, because I like this to be educational, because I hear, you know, ADHD. Explain what ADHD is.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to preface this by saying I am not a clinician.
I know you're not.
So I don't want to give listeners like the wrong idea here. But
you hear it all the time, ADHD, right. ADHD. But I mean, it seems like I never heard of ADHD 10 years ago.
Right.
You know? Did I? I mean, was it out there then?
Yeah. And
then all of a sudden, you know, but what are the symptoms like? Okay, he's got ADHD. What is it?
From my understanding, like I said, as a non-clinician, as someone who just works with providers, who works with these patients, mm-hmm. it's people who have a hard time paying attention, they're overactive, who just need some additional stimulation to help them regulate and feel, you know, I'm going to say, quote unquote, normal. And by normal, I just mean able to function and focus and do well in school and at work.
Yeah, but that can be, I mean, there's a lot of that going on.
Right.
When I was growing up.
Yeah.
You know.
There is. And there's something to be said, you know, as a mom of two young kids, they need to run around a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know there's this kind of, not to go off on a side tangent, but there's kind of this push for like homeschooling or maybe extracurricular activities. And I think there's just what it comes down to in my mind is making sure our kids are stimulated and not sitting there on our phones all day long, which is easier said than done sometimes. But I think there's a strong connection there.
A perfect example. We had a parade party, right? And actually, you know, there at our house, okay? I had a lot of people over and some kids over. And you know, the parade started at 6, or it started later at 6:30, and then it was 7:30 was over, and then adults kind of hung out and, you know, just kind of enjoyed each other's companies. And there were some kids there, little kids, you know, like, I think 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or, you know, just little kids. Those little kids ran nonstop for 3 hours.
Don't you wish you had their energy?
I was just, you know, it's been a while. We don't have any grandkids, and I've been around a lot of kids lately. And I'm like going, oh, my gosh, how do they? I wish I had a quarter of that energy.
Yeah.
Just ran. Yes, it was like crazy. So yeah. You're right. Yeah, they got it. And something besides the phones, of course,
right.
And a TV screen.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. And just that, you know, kids understand that if something is prescribed to you, yeah, it probably is legitimate. I mean, it is legitimate. Your provider found a need, they prescribed, doesn't mean it's necessarily the best fit for your friend, even if they're having the same symptoms. So, you know, that sharing of, or self-medicating, this seems to be a
not only for
issue.
Not, and I'm not a clinician either, but I'm aware of people, aware of kids where, you know, I take note, you know, and, you know, it's good for kids, you know, young teenagers or, you know, youngsters to be active. I'm seeing more and more, kids ride around on their bicycles, you know, I mean, being out and about, but activity. You know, besides being on screens, you know, just get out and run the streets,
right?
You know, is good,
right?
Actually,
yeah, absolutely.
Now we'll switch over and tell us a little bit about your other part of your job. You are the clinic practice manager.
Yes.
What's that entail?
I oversee one of our largest, the largest primary care clinic at GCH, and that's the Illini Clinic. So it's in the same parking lot as our hospital facility. And in that building, we have 9 providers who provide primary care services, and we do have one nurse practitioner who does some psychiatric care, but that has our pediatrician and all of our adult through, you know, any age.
So you oversee all those doctors?
I do, yeah. There's a lot of personalities in that building.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, as young as you are, how do you handle those doctors who are like twice your age?
Yeah. I will say, I think there was probably less for others as much as it is for me, something about getting to a point when you're in your career where you look around and you're the youngest. People laugh when I say something about that because, you know, it's like I'm bragging. I'm really not. It's just, you know, you kind of have to find some confidence in yourself that there's a reason that I was put in this position. I may have the schooling and maybe not so much the experience yet, but this is me earning that experience. And I will say the providers and the staff at the clinic have been wonderful to work with.
Yeah. You must do a good job.
They have met me where I'm at too. You know, I am the person who says I might not have the answer right now, but rest assured I will find it.
Uh-huh.
And they've been, you know, great. They are there for a reason. They are wonderful with their patients and at their job. And I'm really grateful and lucky to be working with them.
And you won this award.
Yes.
Tell us about this award.
Yes.
You won, Under 40 Award.
So the Alton Telegraph and the Riverbend Growth Association every year puts out nominees for the Professionals Under 40 Award. And I actually got a call and said I had been nominated. And I thought it was, I'll be honest, I thought it was a fraudulent call. I had not heard of this award, so I didn't really think anything of it. And then I got an email and I thought, well, maybe there is something to be said. So I asked around at the hospital and they said, well, yeah, Sarah, we nominated you. I'm like, wow. Aww. So I didn't even know they had nominated me, but the JCH administration team had sent that in to the Alton Telegraph. And then they had selected me as one of the nominees this year. So
Colin didn't get nominated.
He did not.
Step it up, buddy. So you got nominated. Now what happens? That you have a big dinner, you get an award, you get some money. What's going on?
Really, from their perspective, I got a really nice write up in the Alton Telegraph, along with all the other nominees and or selectees for this year's class. And I got some nominate or some applauding at work. And yes. Colin owes me a dinner, I think.
I think so. Yes. Well, that's really nice. You know, that's well, you're a hard worker, aren't you? I mean,
I'd like to think so. Yeah, yeah.
You are. I've seen you around. I know you're a hard worker and good mother, hard worker. Colin's lucky to have you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say.
Well, I'm lucky to have him too. I should say that, huh?
Yeah, you guys are a sweet couple. Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, thank you.
Any other things you want to add to this interview? Your people are listening.
Yeah.
So let them know what you're thinking, how you can help them, or any direction you want to.
Yeah, well, I guess I do want to put in a plug for JCH and the services that we offer. We talked a lot about today recovery and treatment options. And so we have a great medication-assisted recovery clinic. This is the only one in a pretty big area. I think the next closest is Alton. And if you're going north, the next closest is Springfield. So if you or a loved one is struggling with substance use, if you're looking for someone to help you meet your recovery needs, if that's for alcohol or opioids or, psychostimulants, anything like that, if this resonates with you, please don't hesitate to give our clinic a call. JCH Clinic has that available to you and to your loved ones. And then, of course, if you're looking for a primary care provider for you or your kiddos, we have plenty of availability. Give a clinic a call and we'll get you set up with one of those docs as well.
What's a psychostimulant?
A psychostimulant is like your meth, amphetamines, illegal substances that they're not all legal. Like Adderall would be a psychostimulant. Basically, okay. It's something that elevates your energy, I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm. But, okay, so they just reach out to the hospital?
Yeah, we'll get you an appointment. Erin Heilman is the provider who does that specifically, and she even has a couple days a month. She goes up to
who do they ask for? They make the call.
They make the call. You talk to our referrals team, and you say, I want to be connected with medication-assisted recovery.
Medication-assisted recovery.
Yep, and they'll get you hooked up.
All right, those are some good words to know. Right. All right, yes. Well, thanks so much, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Loved having you. Thanks. Take care.
Okay.